Today's episode of the Inside EVs podcast is brought to you by E-Range EV Tyre. E-Range EV tyres are specifically engineered for electric vehicles. Using an advanced manufacturing process called liquid phase mixing, E-Range EV's EcoPoint 3 technology creates a tyre with lower rolling resistance and longer range, while offering low levels of wear and high grip. All this while staying affordable. Go to erangetyres.com. That's E-R-A-N-G-E tyres.com to find your EV's next set of tyres.
It's Friday, the 16th of February, and because it's Friday, it means two things. One, it's the end of the week, and the weekend is very nearly upon you, where you can sit on your sofas and relax as you wish. And it's Friday, so it's the Inside EVs podcast day.
Hello. Hooray.
Welcome. Hooray. As ever, I am your host, Alex Goy, joined by Lacey, Misco Electric, Hazel Southwell, and the boss man of Inside EVs, Mr. Patrick George. All wonderfully knowledgeable, beautiful human beings who are going to tell us all about everything going on in EV land. How have your weeks been, friends?
Real good, Alex. How about yours?
Not as productive as I would have liked, but I still got some stuff done. Easily achievable tasks are the best. Lacey, what bit of the world are you in today?
I am in Nashville, so hopefully we'll be here for another couple of weeks. So
that's it. Hopefully
still here. It's home for me for now. Yeah.
Hazel, how nice to call home for a while, though. That's a great.
That's true. I am massively avoiding a winter situation back home in Michigan, so I am grateful for that right now.
you know, it's funny. Yeah. I lived in Austin a long time. I went to school there, and you know, Austin calls itself the live music capital of the world. I always kind of wondered what Nashville had to say about that, but it hasn't come up between the two cities yet. You know, so
maybe that'd be a fun brawl.
Yeah.
Oh
yeah.
Hell of a beef. Yeah. I'd pay to watch that. Live stream it. Have some live bands, like proper Battle of the Bands thing, like either end of a massive hall. That would be ace. Hazel, how are we doing today? You all right?
I'm feeling very fresh and great. yeah, I apologize for how I sound. I sort of had some leaving drinks from my other job last night because I'm moving which bar I work in. Despite my best frankly efforts. Antagonistic style of serving people drinks, it turns out a lot of them like me and bought me a lot of drinks, so I feel great.
Super fresh, super bright, super bouncy. We're going to ask very you all the well hard fueled. Questions that require lots of thinking. And I with that,
do that,
let us discuss EV news.
EV news.
It's been a good week for EVs, friends, but let's kick off with Scout Motors. Its new facility, the ground has been broken thereon. Now, for those of you who aren't entirely familiar with Scout, it's a VW brand. It's going to launch in 2026. It's going to make retro, sort of, but not heritage inspired, so says, I believe, Chris Benjamin, the chief designer, EV SUVs. The Scout, according to Benjamin, was a machine that always worked. But this refers back to the original Scout that was built by a company called International Harvester between 1960 and 1980.
That sounds like so they should make cereal, not like
cereal oat-based products, perhaps.
Yeah.
I love the names of like old American companies and how like formal and serious and scary they are. Like, we're General Motors, we're International Business Machine, we're International Harvester, we're the National Biscuit Company. Like, they didn't have names like, you know, Startup Zooks or whatever that raised capital from Floop Capital. You know, it's all very serious business. And so was the Scout once.
So was the Scout. Well, this is the question.
Yeah. That looks awesome.
Yeah.
Patrick, you've kind of got the skinny on this. Before we go into what happened this week, what do you know about the original Scout? Because that's not something that really graced my fine shores.
Yeah, for sure. I, as one of the two Americans on this pod, I'm happy to fill you in. This is not really a brand I grew up with, but it's really well known with American enthusiasts. International Harvester is kind of what it sounds like. They were a agricultural and heavy industry manufacturing company, but they also dipped their toes into the car world and made the Scout truck and SUV between 1960 and 1980. And this was kind of the Bronco before there was a Bronco. There was the original Jeeps, and then this guy, and then everything kind of kicked off after that, like the Land Rover Defenders. It was one of those really early body on frame off-road vehicles that was really kind of niche at the time, in the 60s and 70s in America, but has since become all of the cars we drive in America, unfortunately. And, through a complicated, they stopped making cars in 1980, but through a complicated series of acquisitions, Volkswagen Group discovered, oh, look, we own this trademark to the Scout Motors brand. Like, look at that. Like
finding a fiver in an old coat. Oh,
yeah. Unbelievable. And from what they've told me is at the end of the 2010s, this kind of got the wheels turning at Volkswagen because, in your part of the world, Alex and Hazel, Volkswagen has like 20% of the market share. Like, it's huge in Europe. It's huge in China still. It's tiny in America, and that's always driven them insane. Even with Porsche and Audi, like, it's a tiny company. It's like 4%, 5% of American market share is the VW group. And so this is their plan to take over America. It's like, we are going to give Americans what they want. We are going to make a factory in South Carolina from the ground and build a ground up platform, all new car. It's an electric truck, an electric SUV. It's meant for off-roading. It's kind of retro looking. It's heritage inspired. It's just like, it's Volkswagen Group saying, look, we're just going to give the Americans what they want. This is your baby. You run with it. The CEO is the former, Scott Keogh is the former CEO of, Volkswagen America, who's a really sharp guy. But they've got the Volkswagen Group backing. They've got, the funding, they've got the factory manufacturing expertise.
Guessing with that comes a lot of part sharing and a lot of kind of, we already have this tech, so put this here and put that there.
Some of it, yes. And I think that there will be some commonality between like the Volkswagen group cars and this, but it is a new platform and they're trying to make their own special interior for it. They want to have buttons and switches and mechanical controls. It's not going to use the battery that the Volkswagen ID4 uses, for example. Like they're still figuring out which battery to use. So it is a really, really fresh effort from them, like in ways we've never kind of seen before from VW Group. So I think this is going to be a really interesting product when it comes to market, and people behind it are really serious. And as Lacey knows, is like a Rivian driver, like this kind of car is like blowing up in America right now, like retro SUVs, whether they're electric or gas powered. So I think this thing could do really well. I mean, Lacey, what's your read on this guy?
Yeah, so I'm super excited about this. Supposedly the SUV is supposed to come out first, and then like 6 months after that, the pickup truck is going to come, but we should see a prototype version of it in Q3 of this year. So I'm super excited for that. Now, I read that they are working with Magna. Magna's got the contract to develop this. So they're going to be in charge of that. Like, it's a huge, hundreds of millions of dollars they're paying them to develop the first couple cars, I believe. And I would guess they're probably going to leverage their Canadian battery facility that their Volkswagen's going to build, just to try to get those incentives from the US market. They said that this first SUV, like a while back, was going to start around $40,000, but we'll see what happens when it comes to market. As we know, it's really hard to say what a price is going to look like and then years later keep that same price point, especially over the years with the pandemic and everything, changing the supply chain and all that. But I don't know. I'm so excited about this because, I mean, when you just think of the blend of the heritage that Scout is, but then bringing it into the future with an electric powertrain. And I like the fact that actually Volkswagen is saying that we're going to kind of do this separately. Obviously, they're going to be forking over the cash to get everything in order, but they're going to actually like treat it mostly as its own thing with its own platform. So I'm very much looking forward to this.
So
the
40,000 US kind of initial jumping in point. Okay. material costs have changed, it's not going to be that affordable or value or whatever you want to put it. But I guess that kind of ties into the original, if my maths is right, the original vehicle, it was a very workaday. It wasn't a luxury vehicle. It was a pickup and a SUV to get people across bumpy fields. A little bit like one of my favorite car manufacturers, the Romanian Dacia, which just does affordable, simple to maintain, easy, like nothing mechanically fancy kind of cars. Is that sort of the value end that you think they're going for, or is it a little bit more upmarket?
I'd say I would not be surprised if it came in more expensive than this. Like the Rivian R2, which we're going to talk about in a minute, is expected to come in, I think, around 50 grand before any tax incentives. I wouldn't be surprised if the Scout was about the same. Because cars are expensive now, and they're packed with more features than ever. And you couldn't even make a brutal work truck like a Scout that, you know, if you crash, you would die. You could even make that today. It's sort of, I think it's the closest equivalent you have is probably your Defender, which was it was like a military and farm truck. And now the Defender
was, it was a marvelous thing. It was sort of based, the inspiration behind it was the Willys Jeep. Mr. Wilkes had one on his farm in Wales and was bombing around in it in the late 1940s and then drew an outline in the sand in 1948 and went, we're going to build that. So he teamed up with Rover and built the Land Rover, which later became the Defender. And it was that the Defender kind of, it was, you know, its initial purpose was work vehicle. It was for farms. It was to get Britain back up and running, basically, when there was huge agribusiness. And it became... Well, a few things. But it was also a vehicle that people, because it was so capable, people used to explore. So it was, in some cases, the first car a lot of people actually saw. And then it became this sort of stamp of luxury of, I live in the countryside, I've got a Defender, which is why the new one, an all-electric version of which I'm sure is on the way, is now a more luxury proposition, because that end of the market is served best by a couple of pickups and like some more hardy work, like a Land Cruiser would do you, or a Hilux would do you. And Land Rover's just gone, well, all the posh people will spend £70,000 on one of these, so we'll make those.
There is this weird trajectory for like off-road vehicles, right? Like Jeep did this, you're right, Land Cruiser did this, you know, Land Rover certainly. It's like it starts out as just this workaday vehicle, and now it's going to be driven by like Russian money launderers who wear very expensive suits. It's weird, like they just go crazy up market because of the margins that the car companies can charge for them. But Wrangler isn't cheap in America anymore.
I was just thinking this when Alex was talking, like, will we at some point see, like, you know, all of these very high-end, because God knows there's, like, a new high-end off-road EV announced every 2 weeks, fairly large estimate. And, like, I wonder if you will start to see them going the other way. Like,
downmarket.
Or just to becoming, like, practical working vehicles. Because I think at the moment that's not how they're being sold, but there is a demand for working vehicles that are zero emissions or very low emissions, particularly for contexts where that's a concern or where things have to be moved around, particularly in low emission zones or places where the intensity of the carbon cost of particularly agriculture and other kind of contexts like construction or like for maintaining a wind farm or something. And if you're hauling around like high emissions trucks for that, that's not going to be great. And mining, especially, there's a lot of looking into this kind of thing. And like that seems, I don't know, I'll be quite interested to see which manufacturer goes like, here is a properly stripped out version. Like, no, it doesn't have any infotainment or whatever, like it just does what it's meant to do. It's a workhorse.
It is a vehicle that does stuff, not a lifestyle statement, an entertainment center, a lounge with wheels.
I'm wondering is that, are they going to be like deciding to go on the premium side of thing and compete with like an R2, or are they going to go towards the Bronco Jeep route of being more economical and then just spice it up based on the different trim levels that you can get. But having a bare bones version, that's like, I could see them like, you know how when the Maverick came out and it had that cool interior and it was just like, you know, a lot of obviously plastic and stuff, but it was really well done. Like as far as like making it feel cool while also making it like durable enough to be able to like spray stuff down and all that. So I'm curious. I wonder if they will compete more with Bronco and Jeep versus like an R2 or a Land Rover product.
They say like the words that Scott Keogh said was like, this is going to be one badass vehicle. Like they say it's going to have like locking diffs and they're going to have like a factory accessory program. Like they very much talk about it like in a Wrangler-ish way. And like they, the reason they didn't use like the like electric MEB platform that's on most like electric Volkswagen Group cars or on the Audis or Porsches, they're like, they're not rugged enough. They're not tough enough. They can't off-road the way that we need. Like they easily could have just taken like an ID4 and put in a retro body on it, called it a Scout.
Just take any one of the 10,000 e-trons.
Yeah, yeah. they could have easily done that. And they're like, no, this is not tough enough for what we want. And we don't think that the image people have of Scout in America, like would buy like a soft crossover. So like kudos to them. They say it's going to be awesome and it's going to be able to like wheel. We'll see. I think the price and this and the range are going to be interesting. We've seen the specs on it so far. I'm sorry, we've not seen the specs on it. We've seen the design sketches on it so far, mm-hmm. but no official photos of what it might look like.
The design sketches are very sort of retro-y, Bronco-y.
Yeah.
Look, it's the 70s again. Weren't the 70s cool? Even one of them is brown.
So yes. Please have a removable roof.
Oh, man,
please have a removable roof. Oh, my God.
But I asked...
Rivian said they were going to have that, and they never came out with it. Maybe the R2 will have it, but...
Oh, that would be so cool. We need more convertible EVs in general. But I asked their chief designer, I'm like, you know, if you go with this retro truck style, like it's going to be aerodynamic as a brick, and that's bad for efficiency. It's bad for highway range. I was like, how do you solve that? And they're like, yeah, we don't care. It wasn't that they don't care. It was more like, it was like the emphasis is making it badass and like look cool and rugged and off-road and not like be like some, you know, Tesla Mercedes EQ looking smooth pebble kind of thing. And I don't know. I think if you're the buyer, that's the trade-off you're going to want. Do you want mm-hmm. the car that looks like a blob and is going to have great range, or do you want something badass? You know,
it is. One more
thing. They should do, like, mm-hmm. Just looking at this, and I don't know if this would be possible because for the last like 30 years or so, she's been pretty solidly a Fiat Chrysler girly, but they should make a Barbie version of this.
Oh my God, that would be iconic.
Ooh, yes. The pink and everything.
I want to buy one. Oh
yeah,
my God.
Yeah. I'd
rock that in pink. One more thing before we move on to our next story. Patrick, they made a huge deal about buttons and having buttons and physical things, because obviously the VW Group of late, it's HMIs, it's all touchscreen, it's all, a lot of them are pretty terrible. They were really terrible, and now there's some of them are okay-ish. ID7's decent, but they've said that this is going to have physical, real buttons. What's the scoop on that? What's the story?
Yeah, again, no, we know even less about the interior than we do of like the design sketches, unfortunately. But like they swear up and down it's going to have like buttons and switches and tactile physical controls. And, you know, I think their argument is like, okay, if a day comes when all cars are electric, not every car needs to be just this screen filled thing that's full of like, you know, streaming and gaming apps that you kind of just sit there, you know, watching while it drives itself or while you're charging. Like some of them just need to be cars. And like, I brought up the point that like trying to operate a screen while you're off-roading a vehicle and going over rocks is like, it's a great way to like throw up all over that screen. You know, the cameras are helpful. Yeah, the cameras are helpful. I actually think this is one area where Rivian falls down, as much as I like those cars a lot. No offense, Lacey, but like I think that like
I agree. Like that's why like last week I said I'm somewhat disappointed in my truck was because mostly the infotainment screen I think is lacking a lot. But
yeah, and it's just a lot to operate all these different features through one screen. And it's also, mm-hmm. they said a way to be different from the rest of the VW group. So it's not going to look like a Golf or a Tiguan or something inside.
Right.
So, You know, I don't know. And I think more and more of these automakers are realizing that customers don't like this, the screen dominance. There's a lot of safety issues there.
True.
So maybe this is a step in the right direction for at least a little bit more balance, you know?
But go bare bones then, you know, like if you're going to go bare bones and then let us like hose it down when it gets dirty and stuff like that all over the place. So it's.
You want like an EV that's like, it has like a choke and like a four on the tree, right?
Yeah. I would take the old Scout and turn it into an EV.
That would be
honestly,
awesome.
I brought this up. I'm surprised they didn't. Because they did like a caravan down from somewhere in a bunch of retro Scouts, which looks
one of them.
Yeah, like not the cleanest vehicle on the road. Looks right. Cool, but like I was like, why didn't you EV convert these? And they were like, where do you get the batteries from? Like we get used Tesla packs. It's not a good look for us. So I don't know. I think at some point
they could just get that. There's like an out of the box. I've definitely written about this. There's like an out of the box Land Rover conversion.
Yeah, from Electrogenic in the UK, you can get that. And there are Electrogenic has I think 3 or 4. Approved fitters, approved places in the US because they sell cars over there all the time. So it is possible, but the way they do it, this is potentially very boring, but the way they do it is you have to send a car to Oxfordshire and then they take the engine and the powertrain out and then they laser scan it and they figure out where they can put stuff. So the process for doing that for a one-off is both very expensive and very lengthy.
Yeah.
This is also like more high tech than the production of that truck ever was when it came off the assembly line. Like we're talking lasers here, you know. Yeah.
It's my friend Nipham has jumped into the comments saying, sounds like you basically want an EV duster. I'm sure Alex would agree. Yes, an EV Dacia duster. Yes, please. I had a petrol one in last week. It was the best thing ever. Anyway, moving on from Scout and moving on to Rivian. As we said, we're going to talk about it later. Now is later. So Rivian R2 is set to be unveiled very, 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 very shortly. March the 7th, the week before my birthday. They reckon it will have a lowish price tag. $40,000 to $60,000 is what we've predicted. But who knows? No one knows what it looks like apart from some spy pictures from a mobile phone very, very far away. Someone went and zoomed in as far as they can go. Lacey, you're our resident Rivian expert. What do you think?
Well, I'm sad because I got invited to go to that event and I can't go, unfortunately. So I'm very depressed. I know. But I'm super excited for this because I think everybody wants a lower cost EV. It'll be interesting to see what the changes are that Rivian's going forward with this platform. Well, I mean, technically it's still an R, so I'm sure there's going to be a lot of carryover, but what are they going to eliminate in order to get that cost down? And what's the range going to look like? Something closer to, you know, the standard pack, which they just released.
Looking at it from afar, the Rivian design language is strong because to my untrained eye, it doesn't look too much different.
No, but that's smart. I mean, like everyone loves the look of these vehicles, like these Rivians, like they look awesome. And you put this in a smaller, more affordable package. I think this is going to print money for this company. I think this is going to be this will be like one of the poster children this year for like what EV slowdown in America. Like this and the Kia EV9. I really like the way this thing is shaping up. And it's like, even if it's just, you know, an R1 S or something that's been downsized, like who cares? Like that's an awesome design. It's going to do super well. I think this is going to be a smash hit when it comes out on March 7th.
Sorry, I don't know where I just stopped talking, but I had some random ad just pop in my ear because I had one of the articles open and it was about worm composting. So it totally threw me off. And I thought it was Danny's thing. So I apologize for just stopping because I was like, why am I hearing about worm composting?
Lacey, are you paying for the premium ad-free subscription to the Inside EVs podcast that you also host?
It was an article, one of the articles that just randomly started playing an ad on that webpage in the background.
Lacey, do you have many worms you need to compost?
I guess.
Apparently,
how big are composting I once nearly did this on a very unsuccessful review drive. How much compost can you fit in an R2?
Go look on that ad, I guess, and maybe they'll tell you the answer.
Yeah, we just need to start Googling.
These are the tough off-road questions we need to know about these vehicles.
So in for our wonderful American co-hosts, what would your ideal R2 be? Like, what would you really want? Would you want an R1 with less stuff? Would you want smaller batteries? Would you want lighter weight? Would you want longer range? What needs to be improved from the R1?
I think if you're asking me, it's like I like the R1 a lot. It's just huge for somebody like, you know, lives in New York City, and I just something that you could parallel park a little easier and still has decent range would be great, you know, because I really liked that vehicle a lot when I drove it. We have a review coming to the InsideEVs.com later this month. I think downsizing it would be my main thing, but I'll defer to the Rivian owner here in the crowd. Like, what would you improve on?
Yeah, lately? I completely agree. I think downsizing is the way to go. They'll probably shrink the battery pack to get a better entry price on that. And now they're making their own in-house motors, so they'll probably include those to a dual motor setup. And that's obviously going to help them save money too, because the original quad motor was Bosch. So I think they're doing everything that they need to in order to get those prices down. I think the interior will be a little less premium than the R1T is. But other than that, you know, I think it'll just be kind of a stripped down version, a little bit smaller. From the pictures that I saw, it didn't look as small as I thought it would be from the spy shots, you know, if that's really what it is. But
it doesn't look tiny at all. It looks quite large, but I guess American downsized is still like a Range Rover.
So. Well, and I mean, to be fair, they're going to probably come out with an R3 and a, you know, other size stuff. So this is probably, you know, I wonder where it sits in the lineup as far as, because they'll probably make something, I would guess, bigger than the R1. And then they'll probably also make something smaller than what we're seeing with R2. So,
I mean, I just love the fact it's called the R2, because if I bought one, I'd call it D2, because I'm a big nerd.
Had that be your license plate?
Oh, hell yeah. Oh, that would be amazing.
I don't know how I didn't think of that yet, but now it's the only thing that I will think of when I encounter that vehicle for years to come. So great work, Alex.
Thank you very much. It would feel cool if it had like the thing, even though we're talking about like stripping down features, like making it a bit more basic. Like, you know, the BMWs have this thing where you can be like, hey, BMW, and it wakes up the whatever. Like, if you could be like, oh, R2, like,
and every time you miss a junction on the nav, it makes that noise. That would be amazing.
That'd be awesome.
Rather than rerouting. And if you get something wrong, it would just give you BP shade.
Yes.
We are coming up with a lot of good like film franchise crossover stuff. Like, OEM should speak to us about this.
Contact at insideevs.com. Anyway, Lacey, sorry, rudely interrupted.
No, I was just saying, I like hope that they have the removable roof on this too, because that would just make me so happy. But did you guys see the patent that Rivian was putting in for their own version of the camp kitchen? Because originally they had a camp kitchen, and actually I talked to the people that were the supplier that designed the original one, and they basically told me, like, we were going to go ahead with this with Rivian, but ultimately, like, it just costs so much money to manufacture that they would have lost money on all of them that they would have sold. At least that's what one of the people that worked at that company told me. So it looks like they're making their own version based on patents that had come through for a camp kitchen. And then I also saw a patent a few weeks back for the R2 that had auxiliary lighting patent up on the top of the vehicle to be able to just basically like factory plug in to the top of the car. So this seems like they're probably going to go ahead and make a lot more accessories than what they currently have with the R1 platform. So that's going to be fun.
A veritable Ford Model T catalog of stuff. If you ever get the chance, when the Model T was at its heyday, there was a catalog of everything you could get in it. And it was like, an inch and a half thick, and it included a plane starter, so you could start your biplane with it. Anyway, I like the idea of that. So Rivian R2, it's a comment. Hopefully we've seen it. Hopefully it'll be good. Now, in slightly more confusing news, EVs are selling for less than they're supposed to be in some cases, and a lot more than they already are. So it's been reported that the EV6 and the IONIQ 5 are 1.9 to 2.5% cheaper than they're supposed to be. The ID4 and the Kona Electric, 3.6 to 4.6% cheaper, whereas cars like the Mini Electric and the Porsche Taycan are 20% more expensive than they're supposed to be. Now, again, I think this is a very uniquely American thing, because of the way the dealer network happens, because if that was to happen in the UK, you go in, you go, this car costs this much, I want that option, I'll see you in 2 months with the rest of the money, and it comes out at that much, or you sign a ridiculous lease deal. So how has this happened? And more importantly, why is this happening? So why is an EV6 cheaper and a Mini Electric or a Taycan way more expensive? Is it a prestige thing? Is it people just not wanting them? Is it a brand recognition thing?
Yeah, first of all, the top line read on this for me is it's great news, because the EV6 and the IONIQ 5 and IONIQ 6 are like three of the like very best electric vehicles in the world right now, full stop, and you can get them brand new cheaper than ever. I'd also add that you know, I've looked up used prices of these things, and like 1 or 2 year old versions of these with like under 30K miles, like lease turn-ins for like 25, 30 grand. Like that's a steal for this car, for the specs it has, for the range it has, the charging speeds it has, the heat pump, all the equipment. This is an amazing deal. The problem is if these things keep depreciating, we don't know how low they're going to go. So you could be left holding the bag if this is not a long-term investment for you. I think this is just tied to slowing EV demand in America. Like there's been a lot of really apocalyptic headlines about like the EV market is cratering and consumers didn't go for it. The Wall Street Journal had a story about that this week that I really did not agree with. The market is slowing down a bit. I think that, you know, these companies that rely on their dealer network, the dealers don't really want to sell these things. The dealers are getting scared. I think they're kind of discounting them very heavily to get them out the door and get them gone. I think they'd rather focus on gas car sales and hybrid sales for now, because we've talked about this on the podcast before, but we're in a bit of a lull between sort of like the way EVs blew up last year and then whatever the next great breakthrough is, whether it's more charging on the road or cheaper cars or better batteries with more range, probably all the above. But for now, in this moment of uncertainty, you can take advantage of that and get like one of the best cars on the road, I think. So go out and get yours, because these things are both awesome, I think.
Yeah, I mean, EV6, I was in one the other week, admittedly a GT, and it was a little bit more punchy than is necessary. But the standard car is really, really good, as is IONIQ 5. But I guess they're based on the same platform. We're going to talk about another vehicle on that platform a little later.
Yeah.
But the question I have is, how come the Porsche and the Mini are more expensive? Is it just because they're seen as more premium products, even though, you know, the Hyundai and the Kia, they're what you'd probably class as luxury?
This is surprising, though, isn't it? Because I bet there aren't very many Porsches and Minis making their way to the States at present, whereas like Kia and Hyundai are absolutely doing the business in terms of getting their cars to different markets. Like there's a lot of them in Europe, there's a lot of them reaching the US, and the kind of logistics problems that companies like Porsche and Mini are facing just don't, like Hyundai and Kia have got that one down. Like,
yeah,
compared to any other manufacturers, they are doing so well in terms of deliveries.
Well, when the IONIQ 5 and the EV6 first came out, the volume was very low. So, and it was during the pandemic. So all the dealers were collecting 10K markups on all the sales of these cars. Yeah. And I think now, since they've got the volume up, they're able to, and they're collecting a lot of these lease incentives with the $7,500 lease loophole with the Hyundai and Kia products, that they can just move them a lot quicker. And they are able to do that. Whereas you know, on the more on the premium side of things with Porsche, they don't qualify for the tax credit, so that doesn't really help them. And it is a low volume item in comparison. So I don't know. That's my take. What I'm interested in is that this just makes me think of, because we're talking about the dealer network and how they can charge basically what they want and they will command it in some cases. But Ford launched this past week their Model E online platform that is now in service, where you can buy their electric vehicles online, all online. And then you would go pick it up at the dealer or whatever. I haven't obviously tried how that works, but I just saw a post last week that that is now in operation. And that makes me think, I don't know if you heard anything, Patrick, while you were at the Scout thing. Sorry to bring it back to that. But are they going to go a traditional dealer route, or are they going to go more of a like hybrid or like direct sales type of thing like the Model E from the Ford perspective? Did you hear anything about that? Because no, I thought they were going to go closer to direct sales vibes.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. We did ask about that. It's all really TBD. They are not going to do like attach these Scouts to like Volkswagen dealerships. Like they want to do like a standalone network. Being that it's the Volkswagen Group, I don't think they have the guts to like go full on direct sales. Like they'd probably get sued by their dealer networks. Yeah. Like it's a little easier to do that if you're Lucid or your Tesla or something, if you've never had a dealer network before. But like if when you run afoul of those people, like they bring the hammer down. So I could honestly see probably standalone dealerships for Scout and then some kind of
like Polestar does.
Yeah. Then some kind of online deal, like, you know, Hyundai is dipping its toes into selling via Amazon. There's the Model E, tactic you mentioned. Yeah, we don't need to go too into this on the podcast, but it is a conundrum for these automakers because, you know, they're so dependent and beholden to their dealers, and the dealers don't want to sell EVs, and like they're trying workarounds there in America, but like, you know, they can't even admit they're doing it, but they're obviously doing it and freaked out. So I don't know what Scout's going to be doing, but it is a problem for these car companies. And, you know, that's going to be an interesting challenge in the years ahead. You know, for now, yeah, you can get yourself a sweet deal on one of these things. And it's also, I'd add, I think that what Lacey said about the markups that happened on the EV6 and Ioniq 5, that's really true. And like there is some value in if a new model comes out in the EV world, there is some value in sort of waiting and seeing a little bit, like because the prices are so up and down. Like I put on a reservation for a Volvo EX30 later this year. And like, I tell you, if that thing gets marked up 10 grand, like I'm so out, it's going to make their head spin. Yeah. Like I'm not putting up with that or even remotely, but I could totally see that happening with that car. And then prices go down, you know, way later on, you know, and you're left holding the bag as the consumer.
That's not ideal and is kind of crazy to me. Anyway, get yourself a cheap car. In not cheap car news, the Tesla Cybertruck has, owners have already reported rust spots, which might or might not be rust. It's a piece by Eric Loveday on the site says, though stainless steel is highly corrosion resistant, it is not corrosion proof. He goes on to say these early examples of corrosion are not what some owners believe them to be. The corrosion right after delivery in one such case is just dust that embeds itself into the stainless steel on the vehicle. So they might not be quite as rusty as they thought. But the owner manual says that, you know, it is normal for a stainless steel exterior to mature over time, but you are it's more dent and scratch resistant than other materials. But if there is something that's corrosive and a bit manky, like grease, oil, bird mess, tree resin, insects, that kind of stuff, get them off the vehicle immediately. Now, after, you know, it's quite popular and quite easy for people to go, oh, Cybertruck, oh, it's rubbish, let's find a way to do it down. But this does seem like it's stainless steel. It's there's a reason the DeLorean did it and everyone else went, no, because it was silly. It gets covered in fingerprints really easily. However, we have Outer Spec Detailing has come up with a solution, and it's really, really simple. What you need is the liquid version of Barkeeper's Friend. Put it on the circular motion using, says Eric Loveday, a bit of an aggressive buff, and then spray Windex onto the side of it and wipe it off. And this should keep your Cybertruck fingerprint free until you need to get into it, use it, or look at it funny again. First and foremost, team, what do we think about the sort of these reports of corrosion? Is it well, what do we think about the whole thing? Because when I first heard it, I went, oh, for goodness sake.
Just sounds like a headache for Tesla if this is going to be a common problem. I mean, this is the only one that I've seen of it being an issue, but I'm maybe there's more reported, but yeah, I'll be interesting to see how the progression of this goes, because that would be a headache for Tesla.
I'll say that like last winter, last year, you know, Kevin Williams at Inside EVs, he did a story about why the Cybertruck's going to be weird from like a maintenance and repair standpoint. And he ended up being ahead of the curve on that, because it was like the only other car that's existed, I mean, to my knowledge, with the stainless steel body is the DeLorean. There's not a lot of people that know how to repair those things or clean them or live with them every day, because it was such a one-off experiment. And like, this is kind of what you're going to deal with if you buy a stainless steel car. Like, people aren't used to that. This is not a you know, aluminum body with you know, true coat all over it that you car wash and wax everything. It's a special material. It's something different. It's going to require different care. And I think folks are just sort of waking up to like, oh, this is not like my Toyota Corolla. I cannot treat it the same way. I'm like you. I'm not 100% sold on the idea that it's actual rust yet. I think it may just be blemishes or dirt or whatever on a material people aren't used to. Yeah. But you know, you bought something special and weird and different, and like don't come crying when operating it is different and weird and special too.
Yeah, and it would be concerning if it's really rust, because you know, the whole, as far as I understand it, the whole point of doing this was to be able to get that stainless steel to use for SpaceX and Starship in volume so that they can send it to space. So you definitely don't want to have any kind of corrosion when it comes to sending stuff up to space.
When your Falcon rocket flies through a crowd, cloud silver and comes out the other side kind of quite bubbly orange. Houston, we have a problem.
We're rusting.
We're rusting at 1,200 miles an hour.
I mean, just generally as well, like, it would be pretty concerning if there is corrosion happening, like you know, these things have been on the road for what, like a bit over a month, like that would be pretty damning of this bodywork. Like Patrick said, I suspect it's something else. Like, I'm guessing you can't just take your Cybertruck to the car wash and like get it all buffed out with the whirly things and whatever, and that be the ideal way to treat it, because like we've all said, it's a different kind of material.
Do people expect to, like, when they're buying the Cybertruck, most of them I feel like wanted to buy it because it was this thing that you could like kick and it wouldn't do anything, it wouldn't dent or anything like that. So like, I feel like they're just gonna, if you have a Cybertruck on order, like, you've maybe already accepted the fact that you were going to treat it different, because obviously it doesn't have the paint and stuff like we're talking about. So you could just beat it up or leave it dirty or whatever the heck.
Yeah. But people are also idiots. So like, you know, it's like you'd think if you order a car with autopilot and FSD, you would have done research to know that I can't just get, like,
you can edit a video while you're
yeah, blackout drunk and let it drive me home. Like, it's, I don't know, like the bar for expecting people to like know what they're doing is pretty low, unfortunately.
I mean, the thing that kind of crosses my mind about it is that either it's one of two things happened. Either they just didn't test it and they didn't see what would actually happen in the real world, which I kind of refuse to believe, because they had them out testing and they would have seen that, oh, that's going orange for some reason. Or they did, and they just haven't informed the customer how it actually works, bar this one panel in the owner's manual that says, clean it if it gets messy. You might have to spot clean things. You might have to look after it, but not as big a thing. And that the backlash.
Once again,
that,
we are demanding cars that you can hose down. That's
this week's theme.
Once again, give me something I can karcher and leave alone inside and out. But if they knowing their audience and knowing, you know, the amount of handholding that people have to go through these days, it's not expected. Like in the 50s and the 60s, you could buy a car and expect it, you know, one glance at the sun or living next to the sea, and it would crumble. And you go, well, yes, car in it. They do that. Now, when you're selling something for, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars with such hype and saying it's going to be the best thing in the world, to just have a page and say, look, this is quite different. You need someone to be on the other end to say, look, OK, it's going to look like it's rusting. It's not rusting. This is what it actually is. This is what it is. And then say, by the way, Barkeeper's Friend and Windex will do it. I mean, don't get me wrong. I have cleaned. So, like, if you really want to clean a car in a hurry, Windex and a microfiber will get it shiny. But every car magazine shoot you've ever seen, that's how you do it. But
and to be fair, yeah, it's like, well, so my Tesla, my Model Y had a black trim piece that went all the way around the trim. If anybody has a Model Y, you might know about this, but it when it gets wet and it sits for a long time, it has these like little, like almost looks like an oil spill all over the trim. And yeah, the service center, actually, like the Tesla service center, showed me a particular product that they use to clean it. So I'll be interested to see in comparison to what Colton put out on the Auto Spec detailing video versus what the service center is going to tell you to clean it with. Like, has anybody heard about that yet?
If you have, let us know in the comments, please, and thank you. It's just a very strange thing. Right. So Teslas are turning orange. If you do find a way, do let us know. Something else I want to talk about this week that I think is quite important is, Patrick, you made a very, very, very good call, and you got the wonderful Jamie Kipman to review the Hyundai, however you want to pronounce it, Ioniq 5N. Now, this is a car that's kind of swept the world with positive reviews, and this is a proper EV hot hatch and everyone seems to love it, but there are some bits of it that some people, even I put this story out on my Twitter this morning and say I love this, and someone already jumped on going, well, why do you like this and why do you like that? It's like, well, because it's good. And basically, so Jamie's driven it, and he went in like a lot of car enthusiasts would have done, going, well, it's got fake gear changes and it's got fake sound, and why is this good, and why are they doing this, and isn't it ridiculous? And he came out kind of loving it, and he cited the fact that we've had things like fake ducts and lights and scoops and exhaust pipes and fake carbon fiber. How many cars have you been in that's got a wood trim that's actually plastic with a thin veneer on it, or just plastic printed wood? So I guess I love Jamie's writing. If you haven't read this piece, do, because it's absolutely brilliant. He says it isn't authentic and he doesn't give a damn, and that's fine. And I guess the point he makes at the end is that, you know, this is kind of the new normal. This is what we're going to get used to. This is how vehicles are going to be. And then in 20, 30 years time, we'll be sitting in the back of our autonomous pod, missing it, I guess, kind of. What are our thoughts, yeah, friends?
I'm glad you enjoyed this piece. I thought he brought up some great points, because Jamie's great. He's very pro EV, but he's an old school car enthusiast. I mean, has a, you know, like a house full of British and European sports cars. He's been writing for Road and Track, I believe Car and Driver before that, for you know, two decades. You know, he's legit, but he gets the way things are going. And I think he had a great take here. And he points out, like, what do you define as authentic? You know, like, we got an angry email at Inside EVs. I don't know why this person emailed an electric vehicle site to say this, but like, EVs are stupid because they have no soul. And I'm like, what is that? I mean, like, I don't think that the Nissan Sentra that my wife owned when we first started dating had much soul either. You know, like, what does that mean even? Like, we sort of pick and choose what we think is authentic and real and positive in this world. And maybe this car, like the Ioniq 5N, simulates a lot of feelings from gas cars rather than be true to them. But like, it's not like that gas car world isn't full of fake stuff too. Fake wood, you know, fake modifications, just, you know, fake trim levels, JC Whitney crap everywhere. You know, I mean, like that's just, it's all made up, you know, like you just got to lean into the fun stuff.
And especially because, like, this is a sports version. Like, N is yeah, Hyundai's kind of motorsport and like sports car souped up version. And like, all of that is fake. Like all of the kind of sporty trimmings that you put, like the bucket seats and this kind of nonsense. Like,
there is no way
people who buy this are not going to be like hooning it through the woods of Sweden. Or like whatever.
No, there's no way you're going to get the full benefit of a carbon fiber bucket seat with a 4-point harness on your way to work. And if you are, you belong in prison because you're driving like an absolute moron. Like, it's the fakery side of it. I haven't driven it yet. I'm sort of on a list to have a go. But I'm kind of excited by it because it does seem to be that. Let me elucidate that thought properly. It seems like it's going to be that midpoint where combustion people go, oh, I get this, and EV people go, ah, see, it is good. Stop being rude about our things.
God, it looks sick as well.
Yeah, it looks really good.
I want to take it to a car park and do donuts.
Which you can do because it has a drift mode. So you can do big skids.
I adore this thing. I'd love to own an Ioniq 5. Like, I think the N would be a bit overcooked for my own personal needs. But I'd take range and practicality over insane performance. But like, I'm really eager to drive this thing later this year. Like, I'm awesome. I think Hyundai did an awesome job with it. There's almost certainly going to be an Ioniq 6 N by virtue of being smaller and lighter. I think it's going to be an even better car. So, what's not to like here? They're trying, you know, and they don't. Again, this is a company that's really undaunted by this EV slowdown we're supposedly in. They're like, we don't care. Like, it's full speed ahead, and they're figuring it out. And this is the result. It's cool stuff like this. So, hell yeah.
Well, speaking of Ioniq 5Ns and needlessly fast EGMP platform cars, I've been driving a needlessly fast EGMP platform car this week. Ooh. I've been in the Fast GV60, which has a ludicrously long name over here, but basically it's got a 77.4 kilowatt-hour battery. It will do 0 to 62 in 4 seconds. It's got 480-odd horsepower. The range is 200 and something miles. It's been cold and miserable, so it's been up and down and left and right and a little bit silly. The figure that I really like, though, is 50 to 70 miles an hour is 2.5 seconds, which is very fast. It's also got a big boost button on the steering wheel. So if you do find yourself with a gap that's vanishing, you can press that and then you'll be in the next county over within about 30 seconds. I thoroughly enjoyed the drive. I mean, when you're not being an idiot, it's just a comfy, quiet thing. Like, the sound system's good. The seats are comfy. The one I have has sort of vegan friendly interior. So it looks like leather, but it isn't leather. They peeled several acrylics for it or whatever it is they use. It's the comfort of it. I really enjoyed the weight you do feel when you're kind of giving it a little bit of a tickle. Not going to lie. I still love the theater that comes when you turn it on. So in the center console, mm-hmm. rather than a gear select switch, there's a ball. There's the crystal ball. What is in your future? Well, it's park, reverse, or drive. That's what it is. That's your future. You're either going forwards, backwards, or you're stopping. And I love that theater. Reminds me of Jaguar Land Rovers of old, where it used to have a disc to turn the to do the gears, and it would rise from the center console while the heat events would open slowly and dramatically to make kind of welcome you to the experience. The power is, it's bordering on needless. I know it's kind of silly to say, and I know I really like fast cars. They're kind of my jam, but the standard EGMP platform stuff is quick enough already. And if you take some of the silliness off, you get more range. And I'm a firm believer that in EVs, especially at the moment, you don't need a normal mode. You need an eco and you need a sport. And that's kind of it.
Yeah.
And then with that, you just need eco and boost, because there's no way you're going to be wanging around it at 1,000 miles an hour everywhere in that thing. It would be ludicrous. You'd be charging every 30 seconds. But it's good, because with a 350-kilowatt charger, you can get from 10 to 80% in just 18 minutes. My one big problem with it is it's even in the muted navy blue I have parked outside, it is quite ugly.
That is 100% Bruce.
Yeah. Bruce, sorry.
Your color combination.
Well, navy blue with an interesting interior. This is Bruce from Finding Nemo, right?
Yes, I think it looks like Bruce from Finding Nemo.
Okay, Patrick, I thought that was some kind of slang I wasn't aware of.
Sorry. We talked about this before the show.
Is this a London thing? Is it a Michigan thing? My brain is like doing the math. What does this mean?
It's like when the kids used to say something cool was very Dench after Judy Dench because she's so cool. Sadly, it is not Bruce after Bruce. Oh, what's his name from Evil
like
Dead?
Bruce Willis.
Even better.
I'm going to see if I can try and make Dench a thing because that's really
it was a thing in the evil for a while.
She's very cool. I have a really brutal comparison to make that I sent Danny a photo to pull up here. But this car, and it's partly admittedly because there is the option for it to come in like Vogon green.
It's such a cool color. Like I can forgive anything.
Like the color is sick.
I forgive any manufacturer really quite frumpy design if the car comes in highlighter proper 80s neon yellow. I think that's just the best. But
another EV from 1998, which also came in this ludicrous green, is the Lada Rappan. And that is literally like every time I look at the GV60 Sport version as a consequence, like this just pops into my brain. This is a photo from the one time it was ever seen, which was at the Paris Auto Show that year.
It's the Lada what? The Lada Lapin, like the French for Rappan. Rappan. Okay.
Which rapid it was not. It had 25 kilowatt motor, which is like 3.5 horsepower or something.
This is electric, this thing.
14 seconds.
14 seconds. I mean, that's 10 more than the GV60, which means you have all your time to admire its greenness.
I mean, it's kind of, it's great to see people referencing EV history.
Do you? I mean, okay, I said I can forgive any car that's in hyper 80s neon, but...
You're questioning yourself.
I may have spoken a little bit too soon. Sorry, Patrick, we interrupted you. You had a point.
Did I? I don't think I ever did.
I was talking about the design being a little challenging.
The point I have is that you're wrong, and the GV60 is good, actually.
It's a good car. It's just...
Yeah.
It is.
Thanks for coming to my TED Talk. I love the way this thing looks. I drove one last winter, and a lot of people came to me and asked me if it was a new Tesla, which is an interesting response to that. I think maybe it's because Genesis isn't super well known yet, or just the vibe of it. But I love this thing. It is fast as hell. I had a GV60 performance. I got up to the bumper on a back road with a Dodge Challenger and a V8, and you know, he was just tearing ass, and I really ran with him in this thing, in this big electric luxury crossover, and outpaced him. I probably sent that guy to therapy, which maybe needed to happen if he's a Challenger owner.
Men will do anything apart from go to therapy. So yeah, you probably did the world a favor.
When your V8 muscle car gets dusted by, you know, a luxury electric crossover, you might need to rethink some things. But like, this thing's dope. It's whimsical and weird. It's, you know, you don't see a ton of these even in the United States because Genesis does not have a lot of dealers yet. They're still kind of pricey in a lot of ways. I looked up while we were having this discussion. I was like, I remember how much I like these things. And like, you want a used one, it's still like 50, 60. And you could get its platform mate, like an EV6 or an Ioniq 5 with same or better specs for much cheaper. But for the right person, this thing's rad. I'd love to see. I hope that design language continues on. They do more with it because I do think this is a really wonderful and underrated EV right now.
Yeah, it's very luxurious. It is very good. Like the luxury, I think the luxury side of it, I agree with to a point, but the idea of Euro luxury versus Korean luxury, especially like over here, it's like, oh, look at all these lovely silver buttons. Yes, but they're plastic. Oh, look at all of this space. Yes, but the materials are a bit weird. And it's kind of, it feels very kind of 1980s sci-fi in a way. There's lots of buttons and there's lots of like shiny materials, but they're not actually, they don't feel very nice in places. And that's one of the reasons, I think one of the reasons why Genesis isn't in the rudest of health in the UK, but the car is ace. And with that, that brings us to the end of our hour, I'm afraid, ladies and gents. As ever, if you would like to get in touch with us, if you've got comments or questions or anything like that, do send us an email to contact@insideevs.com. Huge thanks to our man behind the scenes, Danny Howard, who's been making sure everything runs mega smoothly. And big hugs and thanks to our wonderful, wonderful team of experts, Hazel Southwell, Ms. Go Electric herself, Lacey, and the boss man, Patrick George. We will see you next week for more EV wonderfulness. Have a great weekend, friends. Bye.
Great work.